This conference will.
And it's exciting to be a part of this process because when books and movies come out that are just totally reinforce what we're teaching and preaching in the marketplace, it's a great tool for us. First of all, it's a great tool to find more languaging and information that supports us in everything that we say and do, plus using it as a reference material, putting people in touch with that material because it gives validation to what we keep preaching and teaching. And you know, God knows we need more of that because, you know, there's still people out there that are kind of stuck thinking they don't need supplements or they don't need to eat healthy or they don't need to be serious about their health. So this book is awesome for many reasons. It's also awesome from a practical perspective that about 60% of the book, 60 to 75% of the book is recipes. So for those of you who want to go towards more of a vegetarian diet, I'm telling you, you got a phenomenal amount of terrific recipes in this book because you can actually buy it as a recipe book as well. But we're going to talk about forks over knives today. Anyone have any last-minute questions or issues that they want to ask before I jump into the review of our book review for the month? Nope. Okay, good. So let's jump in. It says, first of all, the first thing I wanted to talk about, because some people say forks over knives, where does that language come from? Because I didn't know when somebody talked about forks over knives to me, probably the first time I heard about this was maybe, I don't know, a month or 2 months ago. And I said, forks over knives, what a funny name to give to a book, right? And as I dug into it, I found out that it comes from the idea that it's better to solve your health issues by eating properly. In other words, using a fork, rather than having surgery, which is using a knife, right? A surgeon's knife. So it's a concept of, you know, why don't you take forks over knives? So that's the whole concept behind the name of the book. So everybody get that clear. I heard somebody in the background. Did somebody have a question? Nope. Must have just blipped in. All right. So now you can understand. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, Mary Jo. I thought forks over knives meant no knives to eat meat. I thought that meant use forks.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, right. But this is actually what it means. It's actually in the book. They wrote this up in the book as what the meaning was. I'm not giving you my interpretation, but it's right out of the book. But that's a good conclusion to draw, too, because they're, you know, the whole concept behind this book is that our dairy is and our meats and those kind of things are the things that are really destroying us today in many, many ways and causing a lot of problems. And we're going to run through that.
CNN last night, I happened to catch they're doing a Dr. Sanjay. He's doing a thing called The Last Heart Attack, and it's going to be replayed on September 3rd, and it talked exactly about these things. They had three doctors on, and they were pushing also vegetables, no meat, and no dairy, no eggs, no oil. So somebody might want to look out for that. They feature Bill Clinton's heart attack and all that. It's really quite interesting about disease coming from. Anyway, it seems like the same lines. I just thought I'd mention it. It's called The Last Heart Attack.
Good, great. In fact, and you know, the intriguing thing is after, I'll tell you, you know, I've not been a vegetarian. I don't eat beef. I might, you know, have a bite here and there just, you know, because it's around the house or my husband wants me to taste his steak or something. Because I don't really even like steak. I mean, everybody in Texas thinks I definitely don't belong in Texas for a lot of other reasons, but that's another one they put on my chart, why I don't belong in the state, because, you know, we're such gigantic beef eaters here. But the idea was that, you know, I'd eat a little bit. After I read this book, I'm really intrigued. I'm just going total vegetarian. And Lydia's even screaming in the background because she's such a huge carnivore. But it really highlights to us. And I'm totally healthy. I mean, I'm asymptomatic because that's all we know about health, right? And my blood pressure is great. You know, 92 over 58. So I don't really have any health issues that would cause me to make a change in my diet, except for the fact that I can see the strength of the arguments that they make. So it's intriguing to me, and I think that, and probably one of the reasons I am as healthy as I am is I eat so little meat, even though I'm not a total vegetarian, and I haven't drank milk from cows since I was like 10 or 11 because I just didn't like it. And thank you, Lord, for not giving me those taste buds. So I stopped drinking it for that reason, and I of course know so much about it today. I wouldn't touch it, no matter what. So and that's always been in my life. So. So there's a lot of things that that I've been doing with this unintentional, more or less by choice, but not intentional from a perspective of purely the devastation that it causes in our bodies. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about this book and what it reveals to us. First of all, the first area of the book, it kicks off and it just talks about it's good for your health. If you look at the history of health and you look at how often we've used plants, you can go back for the beginning of time. In fact, the author talks about like one of the finds they had in archaeology, where they discovered a guy that died, but they found out that they could determine by that his death, it was a 5,000-year-old mummified body, that the man had he was known as the Iceman. He had among his possessions a fungus that scientists discovered can kill internal parasites. So they can tell by that they were already using plants medicinal reasons. And going back further in time, we know that shamans and healers use various plants and herbs, and as well as we've been using these for centuries. We use them currently. A lot of the knowledge that was gained in the past 1,000 years or so, we've lost because a lot of it was destroyed, and we've made a shift, especially here in the United States, to get away from plants as our source of healing and go in a direction where we have conventional medicine. We have drugs and surgery and all that's kind of taken its place, and a lot of emphasis has been put in that direction, which is, if you look at our overall picture, that's been a major piece of the downfall of our healthcare system, because it's really become sick care, and it's just causing us to have so many side effects we're all sicker. But we all understand that concept of it, but it's important to understand the importance of plants in our society from the beginning of time. So plants have always served a tremendous purpose. And today, with that shift in our health that we've focused on drugs and surgery and everything else, you have to ask yourself, are we healthier today than we've been in the past? Because, and today health is such a huge attention that we've been giving it for the last 10, 15, 20 years. But the reality is that we're unhealthier. In fact, we're getting worse every year. We're not getting better. In the United States, he just threw some statistics. I didn't give you all of them, but they might be ones that you use in terms of talking to people. In the United States, one person dies every minute of heart disease. It's still the number one killer in the United States. And one of the major causative factors of heart disease has to do with fats that we get from eating meat. I mean, that's just black and white. That's as clear as can be. That I didn't need to read this book to understand that. Every day, 1,500 people die of cancer. Every day, 1,500 people die of cancer in the United States. 7 out of 10 deaths are caused by chronic diseases. So it's not getting in a car accident. It's a chronic disease that's killing us in this country. In the past decade, diabetes has increased over 90%. So we see, and in children, we know we've seen a 300% increase in childhood diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, which we used to refer to as adult onset, but now they no longer call it adult onset because it's getting to kids. So some of the intriguing things I found in the book that I hadn't recognized before was the next one was companies with vested interest in food and agricultural business have spent millions of dollars per year on ads that discourage people from associating bad health with bad foods. And clearly that has somewhat impacted me because over the years I used to be so angry. I know for the first 10 years of even, working with Manatech or getting involved in health because of my dad's health issue and his phenomenal results, I, dug into health, but I still, in the late 90s, early 2000s, I still just took my anger and frustration out at the pharmaceutical giants. But the reality is it's our food supply, what we're eating, that has triggered the need, quote-unquote, perceived need, for pharmaceutical giants in our country. So the real problem, the real causative factor isn't the pharmaceutical giants. They're just helping to add fuel to a fire, but the fire is triggered by what our food companies have been doing with our food, as well as our dietary changes and what our demands have been. So that's where we need to understand that these food companies and agricultural business companies are out there to absolutely discourage us from acknowledging that there's any correlation between eating the junk that we put in our body and bad health. That's why you see some people out there that keep going. They think they can eat these Hostess Twinkies every day, and they think that it won't impact them. The pharmaceutical industry, as we know, is still a bad guy. I mean, they're not bad people. They just serve a purpose that's not helping us, but really hurting us in so many ways. or I should say marginal help, because there are some people that need to be on certain drugs. But the majority of the drugs we take today, you know, as many doctors will say, are drugs of choice, because it's not choice that you have to take them by the time you're in a position that you're taking them, but it's a choice of choices you've made in your life that have triggered the need for you to take these drugs. And the pharmaceutical industry, which promotes using drugs in support of health versus good food, of course, they, you know, and that goes along with doctors too. Although integrative health is becoming more and more popular, there's still numerous doctors out there that are, you know, they say it doesn't matter what you eat. And whenever a doctor says that to you, I'm telling you, people, you ought to turn around and run as fast as you can, because the guy's crazy. And it's really a situation where why would you want a doctor who's that out of touch with reality to ever be in charge of your health? It's scary to me that people would continue working with a doctor that would say something like that. It's like going to a psychiatrist and telling him you should jump off the bridge and see how it works for you and then come back next week. You know, I mean, you don't deal with crazy people. You just, because everything else that they're going to do for you or with you has that taint of could be off base. So you want to make sure that you're working with people that are consistent in your thinking process, that are knowledgeable or have that basic level of knowledge, that knows that you are what you eat, and food makes a huge difference in your life. But the pharmaceutical industry, of course, retains 1,585 lobbyists on whom it spends over $241 million per year. And these statistics come out like 4 years ago, so you can imagine where they are today. Of course, with their recessionary trend, maybe we've probably not seen a lot of growth in that area and maybe even some cutbacks, but they still put a significant amount of dollars into their lobbyists, and they're the number one industry with the most lobbyists in Washington, D.C., so you can understand why we see some of the bills that get introduced in Washington, D.C. And here's some language for you. I put it in 1D in the outline. It says, the formula for good health may be as simple as this, eating a whole foods, plant-based diet. And this truly is the message of Forks Over Knives. That's truly you want to say, what is the one message that they're getting across in this book, in the movie? It's going to be eating whole foods, plant-based diet. That's the, okay, a plant-based diet is rather simple. I love this quote out of the book, too. I thought you'd enjoy it. It says, it consists of avoiding anything that came from a source that ever had a face or a mother. And why do they put in mother? Well, they're talking about eggs, of course. The egg doesn't have a face. The egg doesn't, but it had a mother, right? A mother laid the egg. So the concept here is that, you know, or milk. A milk doesn't have a face, but it had a mother. It came from the cow. So I should say cow's milk, because there are a lot of other milks out there that don't come from cows that are actually healthy for you. So it's a great statement about what plant-based diet really means. It means your diet consists of grains, fruits, vegetables, and legumes. It consists of whole foods, and we stay away from refined foods, artificial foods, and chemical additives within that, you know, whole food category. So you can still eat grains, fruits, vegetables, and legumes that are harmful to you if you don't, again, apply the second step, which is stay away from refined, stay away from artificial, and stay away from chemical additives. Because there are plenty of the plant-based foods that we've also destroyed in our grocery store shelves. So it's not just about plant-based. It's about also taking the next step of being responsible with, you know, staying away from the things that are toxic for you. And then in the next chapter, he sets out key principles of the plant-based diet. Now, some of these, you're going to see them, and you're going to say, well, Mary Jo, I disagree with that, or I disagree with that. And some of them I might have had a little disagreement around, too. But you need to. I'm just here to present to you his book. And, of course, he's coming not – we at Manatech aren't advocating vegetarian diets, but that's – we are advocating plant-sourced minerals and nutrients, right? I mean, that's really our shtick. Real Food Technology is totally in alignment with what this guy has in this book, Real Food Technology, right? That's what we're about with our Ambritos, with our Phytomatrix, with our that's what we want to aim towards with everybody, that we're getting plant-sourced nutrients. And that's why this book is so helpful for us. But I talk about how to use this in prospecting at the end, so we'll get into that more. But I don't want you to be thinking that Manatech is now advocating vegetarianism. That's not what I'm saying here. It's just there's a tremendous consistency about what's taught in here and what we do with our supplements in Manatech. The key principles of plant-based diet as follows. Eat plants, the more intact, the better. So in other words, you want to eat it as close as you can to how it exists in nature. Does that sound familiar? I mean, I don't know how you guys describe phytomatrix, but this is the familiarity. Or you describe ambertose and how we extract the active saccharides, keeping them in their active state. You know, I mean, so we have it as close as possible as if you're eating that, you know, the algae, the aloe vera. We have everything is the larch bark. All we have it almost identical as if you're eating the plant itself. That's Manitech's whole concept of how they process and get these products processed, that we get as close to the plant itself, and that's what this is saying. There are no nutrients found in animal-based foods that are not abundantly available in plant foods. The only exception the book highlighted was vitamin B12, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So the idea is there, because a lot of people talk about, well, I can't get all that I need from plants, and he's saying absolutely false. There's plenty of nutrients in plants and all these sources that can satisfy what your needs are on a daily basis. And that's important for people to understand as well. Overly processed foods is what you want to avoid, bleached flour, refined sugars, and extracted oils. He was very against olive oil, even olive oil, because understanding olive oil, when you extract it from the olive, you're taking out all the fat, because that's what the oil is, it's just fat, and you're leaving behind the protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals. And so but if you're using it as a replacement to other types of oils, then I'm saying, hey, it's a great oil to use in cooking if you're going to use an oil. Follow me? So don't misinterpret what he's saying here. He's just saying in and of itself, you know, he calls it overly processed because it's extracted. Well, that leaves behind the food cofactors that would be best to be absorbed with the olive oil. But we use olive oil for replacements as a healthier oil than other oils, and you're still accurate in making that assumption with using it in your cooking and in your what you do with it. The third thing he said, avoid preservatives and additives, and I don't need to say much more about that. We know they're all chemicals, and we know most of them are toxic in our bodies, so that's a clear-cut, you know, thing that we're doing every day of our lives anyway, hopefully, in our eating behavior. Eliminate dairy. This is really big for a lot of you because a lot of people still like to drink milk and eat cheeses and all those kind of things. And again, when we look at those things, I know I've taught how to go grocery shopping and I've, you know, done a lot of studying on cheese and knowing that cheese is 80% plus fat, you know, it's even if you eat cheese, how much should you eat? Just very little. So people who like cheese or like to eat cheese, I just try to say, you know, limit yourself to a little slice here or there. Don't, you know, eat a half a pound or take four slices of cheese. I know you like the taste of it, but the idea is it's just 80% fat. It's got some redeeming qualities to it, but it's 80% fat. Well, in his book, you know, Forks Over Knives, he's going eliminate dairy totally. And first of all, let's talk about the protein in cow's milk. Casein, the primary protein in cow's milk, may be one of the most potent chemical carcinogens ever identified. And he refers you to read the China study. Some of you haven't read that book or have gotten that book. That's another great book about how we're destroying ourselves by our food supply. And he even gives you a reference, page 20 in China study. So if you have that book, you can refer back to casein as that primary protein in cow's milk. Don't worry about carbohydrates. In other words, a lot of people worry about carbohydrates because they say low-carb diets. But as I've always told people, you know, vegetables, all these kind of things are high carbohydrates. That's what they are. But they're good carbohydrates. What we talk about low-carb diets is staying away from the processed refined foods. You know, the carbohydrates like the rice and the pastas and the breads. Oh, my gosh. I mean, we just eat so much of the chips, the crackers, I don't even want to get into it. Every time I talk to people about helping them with cholesterol, one of the main categories of foods I try to get them away from are all those baked goods. Anything baked, anything that's in a store in a bag that's been processed, that's a chip, bread, you know, all those tortilla, all that kind of stuff. You got to be careful because that stuff has got tons of trans fats in it as well. But he said those are the kind of carbohydrates that are really bad for you. They cause dramatic changes in your cholesterol levels and they're high carbohydrates from a perspective of, you know, converting to sugar in your bloodstream and causing you to store more fat in your body and make a greater demand on your insulin because the only way your body knows how to use the sugar in your bloodstream is by using insulin to convert it into your energy source. And if you don't use the energy, it stores as fat. So it's a vicious cycle we put ourselves with bad carbohydrates. So when you go to your exclusive plant-based diet, you don't have to worry about carbohydrates because you're not eating any of that junk. You're sticking to the things that are true, as close to plant as possible, the grains, the fruits, the vegetables and legumes that are as close to their natural source. Don't worry about enough protein. A lot of people become vegetarians. In fact, that's one of my big things I highlight to people. Some parents call me and they go, Mary Jo, my daughter just chose to become a vegetarian. She went on a trip and she learned a lot about it, and she said, that's where the direction of my life. And my first concern is always what? Protein. I just say, make sure you get enough protein. Now, why did they say don't worry about protein? Well, because protein comes in a lot of plants. And there are plenty of sources in beans and tofu and all sorts of things that we can build into a all plant-based diet that ensures us that we're getting the proteins we need. We also get, because proteins come in the vegetables. And they said plant foods have plenty of protein. In fact, almost 10% of calories come from proteins. 10% of the calories of plant foods come from the proteins in the foods. So he's saying you get plenty of proteins in your plant-based diet. I just suggest that you do an examination of it to ensure that you're eating the right mix of plant-based, right? That's an important thing, right? Get a good mix to ensure that the protein's there. Another concept he brings up in the plant-based diet is don't worry about omega-3s. Now, this is contrary to what I preach and teach every day of my life. And why do I preach and teach people that take omega-3s as a supplement? The number one reason is because we're so out of balance. If you remember the talk and the rationale, it goes like this. We get so inundated with omega-6s today because omega-6s come from corn. They come from meats because all of our cattle and our all the cows, they raise them with corn instead of raising them free range. So in the grass that they used to eat, there was a lot of omega-3. So we could get omega-3s from meats that we ate. Today, you're eating meats, you're going to get an inundation of omega-6s because they're corn-fed. So anyway, you go on, and all the corn and corn oils and corn starch and corn. It's amazing how many of those ingredients are found in all of our foods we buy in the grocery store shelf. And so we get this massive influx of omega-6s that cause us to be way out of balance. Remember, the numbers are something like 12 to 1 to 20 to 1, omega-6 to omega-3s in our diets. So it's a huge problem for all of us today in our modern diets. And that's why we recommend highly that you don't take a balanced omega product, but that you take omega-3s, because we already know by what's being eaten out there that you're getting enough omega-6s in your daily diet from everything. In fact, you're getting inundated with omega-6s. So, well, if you ate a total plant-based diet, then guess what? The idea here is that if you're eating just a plant-based diet, you're really not throwing yourself out of balance with omega-3s, omega-6s. And in a lot of the plants you eat, you're going to find some basic, level of omega-3s as well. I mean, if it's a grass-based type thing, I don't know how much of that you'd have to examine how much is getting in your body. But the idea is you're not going to have to offset the imbalance that's caused by the other things that are triggering the imbalance. And that's why he suggests don't worry about omega-3s. Would I still take, if I went to a vegetarian diet, which is what I'm looking at, I would still take my omega-3 supplement because I know that we have such a limited amount of omega-3s still, and omega-3s are so important for cardiovascular and for my brain that I would still supplement with omega-3s even on a vegetarian diet. So, but again, that's the rationale behind why he's saying not to worry about them, because you're ridding your body of the excessive inundation of omega-6s by getting rid of a lot of the products falling into dairy and meat category. Another aspect of his diet is consider a vitamin B12 supplement needed for brain and nervous system function. And, of course, we have vitamin B12 in our VitaMatrix. So if you're taking VitaMatrix, you're getting that. You don't need a lot of vitamin B12 on a daily basis. In fact, the needs are 0.4 to 2.8 micrograms per day. But how did we used to get it? We used to get it from eating, from the dirt. I mean, we used to eat, if we pull plants from the soil and there's dirt on them, dirt carries the B12. And cows and meat in meat we eat, because if they're grazed in grass areas and they eat the grass, they're going to be absorbing a lot of the dirt in the process of eating the grass. Well, today what happens when you go to the grocery store and you buy fruits and vegetables, you don't see any dirt on any of your fruits and vegetables. unless of course you go to Farmer's Market, which is sometimes the best place you can get the best value. But or you come over to Mary Jo's house because she's set up a garden this summer. For the first time in my life, I started a garden. What a great year to do it when we had, 45 straight days over 100 degrees in Texas. You know? So we could go on and on about all my experiences around that, but I still have some great cantaloupes and watermelon out there and some other things that are fun. But we weren't as effective as we could have been because of that heat. But the idea is that I can still get dirt on my food because I pick it right out of my garden. But the intriguing thing is that we don't get dirt anymore like we used to, and so we're missing the vitamin B12 because of the excessive amount that we sanitize our fruits and vegetables when we put them in the marketplace. So would Phytomatrix do it for you? Absolutely. Phytomatrix is a great product to get you what you need. So there's the kind of concept they have behind this plant-based diet. So some of the issues and some of the questions you might have about it, and they did a good job of answering some of those. The next chapter, they kind of went into diet-related diseases, and a lot of you are knowledgeable about this, but it's, again, the interesting thing to me was just a little different take on it, the way he described it. So I'm going to run through the diet-related diseases and just give you some of the information out of the book on these respective diseases. And he talks about heart disease. Well, you know, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute recently released a report based on a 10-year findings of their cardiovascular health study, concluding that nearly all males over the age of 65 and females over 70 who have grown up eating a traditional meat-based Western diet are already suffering from some form of heart disease. So it's automatic by having meat in your diet for the most part. In most cases, the root of coronary artery disease is plaque, and we know that. And that's what is plaque other than a greasy, fatty deposit that builds up on the arteries throughout our bodies? And that's what it does. The plaque gets, you know, causes the arteries to get hardened, and then when you have hardening of the arteries, that's a major step in the process of multitude of different heart disease conditions. So it's just, you know, and I just worked with a woman who had a blood clot that got stuck, and she lost her, it stopped the blood from pumping to her brain. She had a heart attack. She's now in a coma, and we're working with her. So there's a lot of repercussions to, and we see it every day. And remember, the statistic about how many people die of heart disease, what is it that one person dies every minute of heart disease? And if we know that this plaque is what's a major causative factor to it, it's time to make some change about, you know, limiting how much plaque we build up. Besides going in there and getting, you know, our veins pumped and all these medical procedures that are they're doing because of our neglect in terms of how we're feeding ourselves. So better that we stay away from altogether. If you look at, again, going back to China study, the Colin Campbell's China study, a 30-year investigation of the health and nutritional habits of 6,500 Chinese in 65 rural villages. What did that show? When they compiled their data, the researchers concluded that American men were 17 times more likely to die from heart disease than rural Chinese men. In certain parts of China where plant-based diets were most common, researchers could not find a single person out of more than 100,000 villagers who had died from heart disease. That's amazing. When you look at our statistic here compared to what's going on there, plant-based diet. So again, critical for us to avoid heart disease is staying away from fatty meats or meats altogether, your choice. I've been in the realm for myself and my family that we don't buy anything. We buy wild buffalo. We buy, I don't buy anything less than 93% meat, you know, 7% fat maximum is for the standard in our house. So I've been cutting out a lot of that, but it's nonetheless, we still have it. So there's, you know, do you have to cold turkey on this process? No, it's not necessary to cold turkey necessarily, but be aware. And if you're going to choose to eat meat, make sure it's got the absolute lowest possible fat content you can. Of course, my husband looks at me and says, well, that's when it tastes terrible. And I go, well, you have a point, because when you take out all that fat, that's what gives a lot of people the flavoring. But know what you're doing to yourself. You're doing it with open eyes. If you want to have heart disease and plaque buildups, then, you know, have at it. You're making a choice. Stroke, he talked about strokes. And, of course, a whole foods plant-based diet has been proven to substantially reduce the risk of stroke. In fact, according to the 50-year framing, many of you are familiar with the Framingham Heart Study conducted by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, For every 3 additional servings of fruits and vegetables you eat per day, your risk of stroke is reduced by 22%. That's good for me because I eat about 8 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, and at least. Lydia says you had 3 for breakfast. You haven't even gotten out of the breakfast area. So my risk of stroke probably reduces 60% or something. I don't know. But that's you need to know that those studies exist. Those statistics are out there, and whether we want to read them or not or comply with them is up to us. Cancer is the next one, and, of course, he talks about animal proteins are known to be powerful cancer promoters. Dairy foods in particular increase the risk of cancer because consuming them, this is an intriguing fact for some of you in regards to cancer, and I didn't know this until I read the book. I might have come across it before, but this really stuck out for me, that that consuming dairy foods increases the production of a hormone called insulin-like growth factor, which is also known as IGF-1. Higher levels of IGF-1 cause higher levels of estrogen in women and testosterone in men, and abnormal levels of these hormones are responsible for most of the breast and prostate cancers that we see happening today. So, again, tying it back to dairy foods, are particular increase the risk of cancer because the IGF factor that they produce in our body. Okay? Next one, diabetes. Diabetes, the number of reported cases of type 2 diabetes, which accounts for 90 to 95% of all diabetes cases, is growing in our country at an alarming rate. And we know that. We see it in children. It's off the charts. The cost today of treating diabetes is unbelievable. I mean, it's just one of the highest expenses that we have in our healthcare system today. Other than cancer, I think it's like right up there. The common view of diabetes is that it develops because people eat too much sugar. And, of course, I tell people to deplete sugar from their diet because I always looked at sugar as a causative factor, because every time you put tons of sugar in your body, what does it require for your body to use it? It requires insulin. So you put so much wear and tear on that pancreas that eventually the pancreas just, you know, doesn't function very well. But that's an issue, but a greater issue is the fact that type 2 diabetes is really the body's capacity to recognize the insulin, right? That's really what it is, that the pancreas is still producing some insulin, but the body can't recognize the insulin. And why does that insulin resistance occur? What's the causative factor in insulin resistance? And he outlines in the book to say, because the cells have become clogged with lipids or fats. So once again, you see the huge benefit of switching to a low-fat, plant-based diet. It will cause the cells to release this excess fat and, in turn, allow the insulin to function normally again. And there were a number of write-ups in the book about, you know, people with diabetes who went to some of these doctors. They have a number of doctors written up in the book that gave their testimonials about what they see in their practice, and who are advocating 100% plant-based diets. And they say it's remarkable how many people they can get off of diabetic medications by just getting to a plant-based diet. That truly, the cells make the shift. They release the fats that are stored in them, freeze them up to be able to recognize and utilize the insulin that's in the body adequately, and people have no more need for diabetes. Isn't that amazing? Remarkable. And I know there's a recent study that came out of the East Coast about putting people on specific diets and very low calories, very, very low calories, but lots of fruits and vegetables, mostly, again, plant-based, and they saw a reversal in diabetes in, I don't remember what the statistic was, and I'm not sure I ever read it, but it was higher than 50% in the subjects that went through this. And it was only like for like a short period of time. It wasn't a 5-year study. It was like a 6-month study or something. That it took 6 months putting on this diet, and people would totally reverse their diabetes. So what a blessing. So it's not, you know, we don't go out there and say, hey, our products reverse diabetes. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm talking to you about dietary changes, and this is something we need to be conscientious about. I always tell people when I get them started on our products, I say, well, don't fool yourself. This isn't about just swallowing some supplements. This is about making decisions about everything that goes between your lips. Because if we don't help people across the board, you know, swallowing supplements, you know, it might help them a little bit, but if they keep eating at McDonald's or having that 3-pound steak every night, we're in trouble. We're not really doing them a big favor. We might give them a little bit more longevity than they would have had, but who knows? They continue to want to kill. It's like like when people say to me, well, Mary Jo, what do you suggest, you know, for somebody who smokes? What products should they take a Manitech? And I just kind of giggle. I say, why should they want to take products to help them live longer when they're trying to kill themselves? And that's the reality. So there's got to be a certain amount of discipline in people's dietary decisions for them to take their health seriously. And that's one of our biggest downfalls, isn't it, people? I mean, that's where we come across people that just aren't willing to change. All right, and then they talked about Alzheimer's disease as well. Alzheimer's and you know, the connection there, I don't think it's quite as great as some of the other conditions, but they did tie that Alzheimer's, which I didn't know, that Alzheimer's is another manifestation of poor cardiovascular health. And it says, studies have shown that moderately high cholesterol levels in people in their 40s can significantly increase the risk of developing Alzheimer's later in life. I had no idea that those studies were out there, but that was intriguing to me. One study showed that for those with cholesterol levels between 200 and 239, the risk of developing dementia increased by 52%, and for those with levels of 240 or higher, the risk was increased by 66%. That's huge. I didn't know. I was unfamiliar with those studies connecting Alzheimer's with high cholesterol levels. So another thing you might want to be using, for what purpose? When you come across people with high cholesterol and they want to take drugs, well, they still have high cholesterol, so the problem is that their body, the drug does a little bit to support it, but the body is still producing this, and what you want to do is get the body in a non-production state. Let's cut out the production of that cholesterol. And there's plenty of dietary you know, approaches you can take. I have a 3 or 4 page document I use to give people, this is what you avoid in your diet, this is what you emphasize in a diet to help support you, as well as being on great supplements, right? So we can help with cholesterol levels, and there's a direct connection with Alzheimer's. So I tell you, if you want to stay away from one disease more than another, Alzheimer's should be at the top, one of the ones at the top of your list. The last one was that he talked about in his book was erectile dysfunction, and the critical issue around erectile dysfunction is totally related to cardiovascular, because it's the blood flow that causes the erection. So erectile dysfunction is a problem that's triggered by some malfunction of your cardiovascular system. So in fact, there's a medical doctor, Dr. Terry Mason, said, you know, erectile dysfunction is like the canary in the coal mine. You guys are familiar with that. That's how they test if there's enough oxygen in a coal mine, is the canary is in a birdcage and it dies. That's the first sign that get the heck out of your, you know, the coal mine, because the oxygen's being depleted. Well, that's what he's saying about erectile dysfunction. He says, if you have erectile dysfunction, it should be bingo, you're already, in line for cardiovascular. You already have cardiovascular disease. So it's something that you really want to take seriously and you want to tackle. And he said a plant-based diet is much less expensive than Viagra. And, of course, Viagra has 101 side effects. But it usually results in a permanent solution to erectile dysfunction without any negative side effects, which is not what Viagra does at all. So the important thing is to look at plant-based diet to help with that condition as well. So that's kind of fun. Hopefully you guys enjoyed going through all those diet-related diseases and the impact of a plant-based diet on each and every one of them. He also talked about how it's good for animals for us to go in a direction. Well, of course, it's kind of like when I started reading this part of the book, I thought of that what's the chicken, Chick-fil-A, the Chick-fil-A commercials where they have little cows out there and say, eat more beef, you know? I thought it was kind of cute, but that's what it reminded me of, because obviously if we eat less animals, we don't kill as many animals, right? So it's good for animals, but it's good for animals in more ways than one. And it's not just about killing the animals. It's fascinating how we raise animals. And if you don't understand how our system works around raising animals for food, it would probably, in and of itself, doing a study of that would probably cause you to stop eating meat, because it's unbelievable what they do today. Farming has totally changed for the sake of maximizing profits and streamlining production. Most of our meats come from factory-style farms. The animals are pushed way beyond their biological limits and subjected to massive amounts of stress. So there's tremendous animal abuse going on in animal farming. And I'm not here to offend people on this call that might be farmers, because every farmer has a choice they can make. But this is an overall statement about what we see, for the most part, of what's going on in raising farm animals. So the problem with fish, same thing, how they're caught is second only in damage to how they're raised, the fur in the raised. And again, you know, these farm-raised fish, you know what I read some of the things. They actually starve them for the last 2 weeks in captivity to make sure their intestines are clean. There's nothing left in their system. Isn't that amazing? So they starve them. They intentionally starve live animals. It's just a sad, just reading this stuff really grossed me out. And it upset me that we are so abusive to such wonderful living things like these animals. All these cruel practices are legal. In fact, there was a New York Times article, April 14th, 2011, that said state looked to ban efforts to reveal farm abuse. It's really states. We are not working on banning farm animal abuse, but rather banning the revelation of it. In other words, they're not allowing you to reveal what happens in raising farm animals. So they're restricting people from publishing this. Isn't this incredible? I mean, it's just incredible to me. Of course, they're trying to protect what? The industry. They're trying to protect the money. It's all about how much money people make. But the idea that they're withholding from us information about how farm animals are raised and the abuse that goes on, it's just mind-boggling. So, of course, he's promoting a plant-based diet to save the animals and help them be healthier and not have to go through all this. Good for the environment as well. And he has got a whole part in here about how it affects the environment, and I'll run through that briefly. Some of you talk about global warming, and most of the time people talk about global warming, and other probably people on this call that don't believe in it, because that's a big theory out there as well. All I see is the ice melting all over the world, and it kind of concerns me, and how the damage we're doing to our environment, whether you like the fact of global warming, everybody has to admit that our pollution today is destroying our earth. We're showing tremendous disrespect for the earth that God's given us, and we were given it, from a Christian perspective, we were to be the keepers of this earth, and it's got to be awfully embarrassing to see what we're doing to what God gave us to be good stewards of. That's all my point is, whether you agree with global warming or not. But the global warming he talks about in his book is not about car emissions. He says the United Nations has determined that raising livestock for food purposes generates more climate heating gases than do all the carbon dioxide emitting vehicles combined. Isn't that amazing? That was a statistic I had no idea of, that raising livestock for food purposes generates more climate heating gases than do all carbon dioxide emitting vehicles combined. The livestock sector accounts for nearly 10% of human-induced carbon dioxide emissions, 37% of methane emissions, which methane is about 23 times more powerful than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. These are huge statistics, people, that I was totally unaware of. So that was fascinating to me. He said a report in New Scientist estimated that driving a hybrid car could save about 1 ton of CO2 emissions per year, but adopting a plant-based diet would save nearly 1.5 tons over a comparable period. Amazing. So another good reason to become a plant-based diet eater instead of meat, right? So good global warming, deforestation, livestock operations in 2011 account for 30% of the Earth's entire land surface use. 30% of the Earth's entire land surface use, livestock operations. That's probably for some of you unimaginable because where you live. But if you live in Iowa or you live in Wisconsin or, Minnesota or Illinois, some of the, that area, you're going to understand, sure, some of your states are 75% livestock production. And much of that land has been deforested to create pasture land. So we see that they made a statistic in here. For each hamburger produced from animals raised on rainforest land, approximately 55 square feet of forest have been destroyed. So we're watching forest deforestation. Waste products, again, according to a 1997 report by the Senate Agriculture Committee, animals raised for slaughter produce 130 times as much waste as the entire human population. Our waste as humans is chemically treated in sanitation plants, but animal waste is not. And they produce 130 times as much waste as the entire human population. So, again, another issue. Water pollution, they found that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency estimates 1 pound of processed beef requires 2,500 gallons of water. That's for 1 pound of processed beef. Contrast that with 250 gallons needed per pound of soy or the 25 gallons per pound of wheat. So you see that huge distinction in what you're eating and how much water needs to be used. Fisheries are depleted. We see a 76% of our fish stocks either fully exploited, overexploited, or depleted. So, and as of 2010, the top six types of fish now eaten in the United States are farmed. And we know what they feed in farm fish. That's why I find fish a very dangerous product to eat more than once or twice a week. Endangered species, that we're depleting those as well. The systemic elimination of whales, wolves, sharks, tigers, mountain lions, other predators also cause irreversible changes throughout the entire food chain. And, you know, overfishing, hunting, pollution, desertification are top causes of our natural habitat destruction. And then finally, soil erosion. Farms are the leading cause of soil erosion by far. And that erosion, topsoil mixed with agrochemicals and animal waste, leads directly to sedimentation and pollution of watersheds, reservoirs, lakes, and oceans. So approximately 40% of the world's agricultural land is seriously degraded, according to the scientists at the International Food Policy Research Institute. And farming accounts for 55% of all soil erosion. So again, what's the solution? At the bottom, he goes, what can you do? He says, you can eat a plant-based diet. You know, move in a different direction. He also talked about reading food labels. He said copies of what food labels would look like on plant products versus meat products if same requirement of warnings that pharmaceuticals have. I attached those three pages because I thought they were kind of interesting. So I've attached that to the outline so you can participate and read that. And then the rest of the book, amazingly enough, which is about three-quarters of it, I should say, or at least 60%, is all recipes. And they're great recipes. I started looking at them, and I thought, you know, I'm excited because I'm going to start doing some of these recipes. So if you need a good recipe book and you want to have forks over knives as well so you have all the reference there, and what a great book for you to buy. But it's great in recipes to help you eat a total plant-based diet. And the last thing I put in the outline, which is something Lydia had asked me to do, she says, well, how do they use this to prospect? So I think that here's some ideas. I gave you a video clip you can send out by email. On, you know, it's just kind of an introduction to forks over knives. Many doctors are written up in this book, and I use some of their quotes in the book. I think what did I say? There was something in here. I thought I put a couple of them in the outline, but they're just great quotes that you can get from the book that would help you in terms of, you know, what you communicate to people. And some of the quotes are written in such a way that they talk about, I must have deleted the one. I picked out one for sure. Let me just find it for you. It was one of my favorites that I located. And there are great stories in here from different doctors about what, you know, eating healthy products can do. But they make comments in here about how diabetes and heart disease can be totally reversed by just eating a plant-based diet. And doctors are making those statements. And you can quote these doctors when you're out there talking to people, and you can use it in materials that you generate for people to read so that people can be more aware about how incredible just a change in a diet could be in terms of taking over what's happening in your life, your health conditions. So resolve them. A lot of people are kind of, you know, just saying, well, my diabetes is going to always be with me. And you have an opportunity to change their mind with a lot of the quotes that are in the book about what doctors are saying about it. Anytime a book makes statements that support our Phytomatrix and Ambritose, use it. That's another thing. It's a reference. It's a reinforcement. It's a validation of what we talk about, and especially when we start talking about real food technology, right? What is real food technology? Whole foods, plant-based diet is identical to real food technology because it's about, hey, it's as close as you can get. Remember, it says eat the fruits and vegetables, eat the plants as close as you can get to their natural intact state. And that's what real food technology is. It's about taking real plants and building supplements out of them to bring them to you in as close of their real state as possible. So, you know, wonderful. You can ask people if they've seen movies like Forks Over Knives, Food, Inc., Super Size It. There's so many movies out there today about how our food products are just terrible, terribly deficient, and absolutely destructive of our human bodies. And then you can talk about the most recent one being Forks Over Knives, incredible movie and now book, all based on the fact that a whole food plant-based diet can save our healthcare system as well as reverse the downward trend, health trend in our nation. That's just some language for you that you can use when you talk about this. But what a great opportunity for you. And you can even use this Forks Over Knives as a icebreaker. You can say, you know, I saw a movie the other day called Forks Over Knives. Have you heard about it? And, you know, and talk about it as a something new that's in the marketplace that people need to be aware of. It's probably something you might have already acknowledged, but it was a fascinating read for me because of this, this, and this, right? And you can take three of the items out of it. But it's going to generate, begin a conversation. Instead of you saying, hey, I really want you to sign up at this network marketing company to swallow my products because they're better than everybody else's, that's an awkward way to start a conversation. But talking about a brand new book or a brand new movie, this is the way that you can break that ice with people and then get them on the right track to discuss what you want them to talk about, which is what? Their overall health. Okay, people, that's all I got for today. Any comments, questions? Anyone have any insights they want to offer? Was this helpful for you?
Yes, Mary Jo. I just want to make a comment and then a request of you. I read another book that goes right with this book here, which is endorsed by Dr. Hemet Oz and Dr. Sanjay Gupta. It's called The Blue Zones by Dan Buettner.
Uh-huh.
And that's the five blue zones of people who live, including one here in the United States, in Loma Linda, live over 100 years traditionally, close or to over 100 years, and the diet that they follow, which is close to what this book that you just discussed is. And I read the China study, and it kind of, I put it down. I said, boy, I don't want to go this way. But here Mary Jo goes and kicks me in the hiney, and so.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like, okay, maybe there's really something to this, right?
Yeah,
I know.
I'm going to change. I've got to, because if I'm going to talk about health, then I've got to walk the walk.
Yeah.
And what I need, though, my request would be, you know, that list, you know, three or four pages that you give people when they want to change to something that's more, you know, beneficial for their health or dietary needs. Could you send that out by email?
The list I talked about was specific to cholesterol. When I have somebody that has a cholesterol issue, I say, here's what you want. So I don't have something that's just an overall, here's how you should make dietary changes. But, you know, I could probably locate something for you for that as well, because I think it's kind of, you have to look at every aspect of the diet, you know. And most of the things that I've developed or put together in the past were aimed at specific conditions, you know, like if you have cholesterol, because I never like to tell people, hey, swallow my products and you're going to have recovery, because first of all, it's illegal, right? We know we can't talk like that because we don't treat diseases. We just help the body be the best the body can be. So I talk about you want to take our supplements because it's, you know, unless you want to forage for plants every day and find all these nutrients, this is the best source. And this is the best way for you to ensure that you have them in your body every day, the things your cells need. That's the purpose of the product. But then I go, but you have to understand that you could be creating the problem. In fact, majority of us are creating our own health problems. And to try to take you off the responsibility around that, let's move you away from being irresponsible into a place of responsibility by giving you a list of things to avoid and things that you want to add to your diet that are going to help in the area of cholesterol, which don't have anything to do with our supplements, but they do have to do with just basic common sense about diet, right? So if you want me to send you out, I can have Lydia send out to everybody what I hand out for cholesterol. I have a specific one on that. But, yep,
I can do that. Get the book, because I'm definitely going to follow diets.
Good to hear it. And you know what? The beauty of it is that it doesn't matter how young, how old, how bad, how many conditions you have, you can change. Start today. And that's the wonderful thing. Yeah. And I don't blame you. I have the same thing. I fault myself. You know, I was a Diet Coke drinker for ages, and finally I just said, you know, Mary Jo, if you're going to be out there sharing people health, you are not going to be drinking Diet Coke. I mean, it was like my last thing that I had that I, you know, I was eating whatever, and all, but that stupid Diet Coke would keep coming up in my life. And so it's gone. I mean, it's gone forever. But it's not easy to do that because, you know, it's habits. We have habits, and they're hard to break. But when you start realizing the price you're paying, And my issue for me was I felt totally out of integrity. And I don't want to walk this walk on earth feeling out of integrity. If I'm really going to be about health, and you know what? I am going to walk that walk 100%. I'm putting my life out there. And that's why this whole thing about eating a plant-based diet intrigues me, because I'm kind of close to doing it anyway, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I can leave the last vestiges of meat behind me, because, you know, I never liked it in the first place. I'm not a meat eater, so I just kind of eat it because Lydia yells at me to get protein in my diet. but I'm not advising everybody. I don't say that you're out of integrity if you eat meat. You can do it like I do for my family. It's got to be, you know, really, really strict, high meat, low fat content. You know, I really am diligent about what kind of meat that comes in this house. So, all right, people, I love
it. Joe, can I just say two things?
Yep, go ahead.
Just real quick. When I'm talking with my people about supplements and also encouraging them to eat whole foods, I just tell them, think about an apple juice, applesauce, or an apple. If you have a choice between those three, always choose the apple because it's whole, it's got the skin which has fiber, etc. If you only have a choice between applesauce and apple juice, then by all means take the applesauce because it's less processed. And I don't think people think about that when they're thinking, okay, I've got to, you know, eat this way. But if they just have that simple paradigm, I think it makes it easier. And then the other thing is, I've had like three or four people tell me, and I have not seen it, but it goes right in with Forks Over Knives, and I also got the DVD with the book, and it's excellent, is a movie that you can watch on Netflix called Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. And I've had three or four people tell me about it and that it's very good, and it sounds like it goes right along with Forks Over Knives. So if people, you know, haven't gotten online to order the DVD, maybe they could just get right on and start watching Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead.
Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, and you can do that for free?
It's on Netflix, so I think
Netflix.
About it.
You have to have a Netflix or subscriber. Okay, it's Fat,
right.
Sick, and Nearly Dead. Great, thank you. And the applesauce, apple juice thing was terrific. I hope everybody picks this up on this call because that's an incredible tool to use when you work with people around diet. It's just, you know, it's education that they just don't recognize. It's visual, but it's a reality check. It's they think that if they eat an apple tart, they're getting their fruit for the day.
But you know what ends up happening is when they eat the whole apple or the whole fruit,
yep,
because that skin has such great fiber, it helps even out their blood sugar, and it helps clean out their intestines as it's going because of the fiber. And
absolutely,
so people don't realize that. And then I also wanted to make a comment to Lydia about the protein. We have so much protein in the plant world, and our body can readily absorb it when it is in the plant form.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is definitely a misnomer that we don't get enough protein. So
right.
Anyway, thank you, Mary Jo.
I totally agree with you. I think people think that the only source of protein out there is meat, and that's so erroneous. So we need to throw that away and go back to recognizing that there are lots of proteins in you know, plants. So great. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Mary Jo.
Yes, Fred. Yep.
Yes. I look forward to seeing you in Seattle. I want
to
talk.
Absolutely great, Fred. Good.
I want to talk to you then a little bit more about this resurgence factor and the vitamin approach that you're working on, how to get people back on board. And I did send you an email a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half ago. I hope you got that.
I'll double check. I'll talk to Lydia. We've been traveling so much and kind of underway. Let me. I don't remember getting one from you, Fred, but I'll talk to Lydia. I'll definitely.
And I copied her on email also. I copied Lydia.
Super.
But anyhow,
super.
I'll talk to you in Seattle a lot.
I'll see you in Seattle. I'm excited. Great.
Yeah,
okay, people.
It's really interesting. Okay.
Yep, it is. Great. All right. Love you all. Have a great week. And in fact, 2 weeks. Remember, next Monday, we do not have a Monday call because it's Labor Day. So we'll see you in 2 weeks on the Monday call. But definitely end of business period this week and also ManaQuest. Don't forget to be watching it on live. Okay. Love you. Bye-bye.